Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to Really with Dave and Tom.
This is going to have a spooky vibe to it, this
episode. I'm trying to make it a little, yeah, because it fits with our guest.
It does.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to our excellent guest shortly, but we have... I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Are you missing me now that I'm not in L.A.?
I do miss you.
I was in L.A. for 3 months, and I think we saw each other twice.
it was not enough, but those moments were...
We saw each other more online like this than we did.
I felt like I was talking to you nonstop, so, I mean, let's not... I mean, you weren't abandoned. We were deeply in contact.
Yeah, and I got to see Christina. That's Tom's wife. Anyone who doesn't know that,
and that's a far superior visit than me
and your kids.
Yeah. This was good. And it's how's it in New York? It's been good. You're taking care of it.
It's New York. Oh, it's today. Today spring leapt into full gear. Today it's like 75 degrees. Leaves were just like screaming. They were sprouting so fast. It was sounded like a horror show in the park.
Screaming leaves is always a good sign.
Trees are just, I'm sprouting leaves.
With photosynthesis and joy.
Of course, it's New York, so no one paid any attention. So
The screams are left unanswered in New York, in the canyons of those buildings. Hey, we have to do a couple things that are important. First of all, we need to remind if you're enjoying our content of Really, please subscribe, please like and subscribe, and please leave some comments and all that stuff. We read everything. Reviews. We look at all that. Yeah. Stuff you like, don't like, whatever. It's we would love to hear from you, and please click on that button there or whatever you need to do to get us full time into your homes.
Both on your podcasting apps and on or if you're watching us on the YouTube.
All that stuff.
They have
want to hear from you. We love you and want to hear from you. And speaking of that, we have some very special Patreon members that we want to call out today.
Yes, because we've decided to try and make being a Patreon member less lame.
We're going to
actually try to get some stuff done.
We're going to pay more attention to our loyalist listeners. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Loyalist is a word, isn't it? But that wouldn't be in that context. Loyaler. Loyaler sounds weird.
Oops, I don't need that.
Do you have the list, Dave?
Yeah, hang on. I do.
What are you doing?
Do you have the list? Do you not have the list? I've got the
list. You making a call? What's happening over there?
No, people, I was getting a calendar alert.
Oh, well, this is important. You got to focus on this. Put your calendar away.
So we want to thank some of our patrons. Do you have the list in front of you, Tom?
I do. You want me to start going?
Well, the second one you should probably definitely.
The first we've few. got Ben Kaboom, thank you. Bill Wheeler, I mean, you know, I believe he's near and dear to my heart. Chip Knee, Chris Hartman, Christine Herholtz, Christine Terbihe? Terbige?
That's, look, if you're not gonna take this seriously, I'll take over.
Emily, I'm trying. Again. I am trying.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce that either. Terbige.
Yes. Grateful, Christine, maybe? Wherever you are.
Thank you. We'll try to get someone to give us a phonetic reading on that.
Yes.
We have Emily Fagan, Evie or Evie, Gus Olson, Hella, Jean Anzulis or Gene Anzulis.
Gene Anzulis, yes.
Oh, it's that Gene Anzulis. Yes, now I recognize.
I would think so.
Yes.
We love you,
yes.
Gene.
Who has been on the show. Joshua Colkins or Colchins.
Colchins.
Joshua Colchins. Marty, Max Ampero, and Melinda Banks, who I know quite well.
The bearded UFO guy, Gaz. Virginia Four, Y. Duran. Bjorn Neuhauser. Do you have the rest of the list there, Dave?
Sure. Debbie Barlow. John Cook. KD. Steve Smith. That's an easy one.
Yes. Thank you, Steve.
This is Arlene Babka, and of course, last but not least, in any way, Igor Stochek, or Ihor, I believe that is the correct pronunciation of it, Ihor. Maybe it's Stochek.
Listen, Igor, thank you, and we love our Patreon members. Thank you for subscribing, being loyal to our Patreon accounts. You're going to get all sorts of free content, and if you leave your name and sign on to our Patreon, then you we'll call you out on air, we'll get all sorts of cool stuff's gonna be happening.
Yeah,
and getting thing going.
And you
on
can
here.
Treat Tom's home as an Airbnb.
Yes,
that's one of the things we'll be offering down the road.
I wasn't aware of that, but
no, he didn't know till just now. But anyone who's on the Patreon can just go stay at Tom's house anytime they like.
Yes, I've missed a meeting, I think.
Yeah, but Christina is a wonderful cook, and a great conversationalist.
Is she supposed to stay with the people?
She doesn't know about this yet either. But yeah, you're both going to be. Yeah, that's part of the deal. That
we stay with them. Okay. Yeah. Listen, it seems like a good group. I would. I'm open. Let's just say I'm open.
Yes, and your giant son Luca. We'll give piggyback rides to anyone who's staying in the house.
Getting into a weird area, but
I'm just saying this. You know, we're trying to make this worthwhile for people. Tom.
That's really. I don't.
Why are you fighting me on this?
I'm not. Right. I just feel like I've lost some of. I don't know. I should be read in, or there's a memo somewhere that's important that I didn't read.
Well, listen. Stay on the email chains. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. This is coming from the email master himself, Dave Foley.
I've never met
an email he's actually responded to.
Yes.
Okay.
Or read, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Dave
Schrader doesn't want to deal with this nonsense, and he doesn't want to hear our internal squabbles because he's the host of the Paranormal 60 podcast and the lead investigator of Travel Channel and Discovery's acclaimed series, The Holzer Files and Ghosts of Devil's Perch, with appearances on Paranormal State, Ghost Adventures, and riveting documentaries like The Curse of Lizzie Borden and Demon in the White House. Dave has become a trusted authority on all things paranormal. From his earliest days, Dave has been immersed in a world of haunted houses, mysterious creatures, and intriguing UFO encounters. But he's not merely a bystander. He plunges headlong into the paranormal realm, investigating claims and traversing the most haunted locales across the globe. His new book is called Theater of the Mind, and we are really fortunate to have him with us. Oh, look at that. That looks cool. Order his book. Yeah, he'll give you all. We'll get you all the links and whatnot. But let's bring on Dave Schrader himself, sir.
So, I'm completing my Patreon subscription.
Yes,
and
thank you.
The third weekend in June, Tom. I'm looking forward to staying at your bed and breakfast. So, thank you.
Listen, I just need to text
really
my wife quickly.
Way.
It's going to be great.
Oh, don't worry. I already did that. I included the message right in there that this was taking place. And I'd like to thank ChatGPT for that amazing biography you just read for me.
It was beautiful. I mean, it read like a dream. No problems at all with that.
Yeah.
Welcome, sir.
And don't forget your swimsuit when you're at Tom's. He has a lovely pool.
Suddenly we have to wear swimsuits when we swim.
Yeah, piggybacks with my son. It sounds all really wholesome, doesn't it? Like this is this gone. Yeah. This has gone really
swimsuits for the piggyback rides, but the swimming suit should be.
Oh my lord.
I mean, Luca's a massive young man.
He's a big fella. I mean, he can handle a piggyback, but I don't, I feel a little, you know, awkward volunteering him for such activities with strangers. But, you know, listen, we do what we can for
bring
our
candy
lawyers.
And puppies if it helps.
How do we get out of here?
How are you, Dave?
Get to you, please.
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me on, gentlemen. I appreciate this.
Oh, this is great. No, we're thrilled to have you.
I'll be back again some other time. Thanks.
Thank you. Great. I had the pleasure of being on yours, your YouTube channel and podcast a while back, which was fun. And of course, we know each other from the world of fan festivals.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And it's, you know, I've invited you many more times. If you'd read the emails, you would know that you're always
thank
welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, I'll do that.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. Little backup. Never hurts.
That. Oh yeah. I have no argument against that. I'm not a good email reader.
It's the envelope at the bottom of your screen. Should be to the left, and you click on that and have numbers.
I get overwhelmed by the 4,000 DNC emails I get every day, because I contributed to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Yes. And if you unsubscribe, though, it's true. It never works. I mean, the amount of time one spends unsubscribing.
Yeah.
Dave. Okay.
Well, just for your knowledge, Dave, I did find out that you can get unsubscribed from the DNC and Hillary's OnlyFoot website simply by clicking the unsubscribe at the bottom of that email.
Well, I'm going to try then.
Yeah.
I feel like I've tried everything.
Of course, you gave up a long time ago.
The main thing I've tried is not opening my email.
That works for you, but then you miss everybody else.
He's doing that terrific. He's handling that part of it very well.
Yeah, my managers and agents don't like it either.
Let's talk the paranormal here. First of all, you cover a broad swath of you're out in the field. You're doing excellent interviews, and I'm curious what starts this for you? Was there a personal experience? Was it just somehow stumbled into this phenomenon? Where does it start for you, sir?
This Dave Schrader is a little boy.
I was maybe about three and a half, and the ghost of my grandmother would visit me when I would go spend the night at my grandparents' house.
Oh.
And my mom thought this was just my brain's way of trying to process grieving, and I was very close with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. My grandparents slept on separate ends of the house. They loved each other very much, but my grandfather snored like a glass going through a chipper shredder. And so I would sleep in her room when I would go to visit, and I would, you know, my mom would come pick me up and I would talk about how grandma read to me last night or these things. And it just would happen all the time. And then once I got very specific, mom was telling me, you know, honey, we've talked about this, grandma's in heaven. And I said, I know. And she misses us. And she was wearing a silly dress with dots on it, and she didn't have all of her teeth. And my mom was like, that's oddly weird and specific. And she mentions it to my aunt in passing. And my aunt still lived at my grandfather's house at the time. She was just barely out of teenage years. And my aunt's jaw hit the floor because my grandmother had died dealing with cirrhosis and an aneurysm. She didn't look like herself. So they had done a closed casket. Only three people knew what my grandmother were buried in. And that was my aunt who picked up the outfit, my grandfather who took it to the mortician, and the mortician himself. And I described to a T the dress, the necklace, and the fact that they had, in fact, removed her false teeth for burial. And when my aunt heard that, her jaw just hit the floor. And then she confided in my mom. She had received a phone call from my grandmother after her passing as well. So it's always been part of my life, this supernatural.
And other family members too.
Do you remember that? Because sometimes we tell stories and we hear about the stories and sort of think, yourself have a memory of that?
Not at all. And I'm very open with the fact I'm a skeptical believer. I believe because I've had experiences, but I also question my own experiences, wanting to understand what really takes place. So I'm so disassociated from that moment. I have only heard it through the telling from my mom and my aunt. And I had other experiences throughout my life, and I grew up in Medina, Illinois, couldn't be any more white bread town in any city in the world. But I grew up there, and we had a very haunted little ranch style house. No clue why it was haunted. Never felt any kind of threatening or malevolent, but you could definitely hear footsteps. When you were downstairs, you'd hear somebody walking around, talking, and you'd go upstairs and there'd be nobody there, and you'd settle down, and then you could hear people downstairs. So it was always just weird combination. And my mom and aunt were kind of two of the main people in my lives, and they never shut that down. They were always reading some Stephen King book or Hans Holzer or Ed and Lorraine Warren, and they were very open about the high strangeness in the world around us. So when I had questions, it was always just tackled without it being taboo.
Which is great. I mean, I think that's, you know, it leaves one open and you know, I was kind of a susceptible, I think we're just all kids are, you know, and it's just that, but that can easily get sort of shut down. I think all kids are sort of open to that. And so was that, were you, as you're growing up, thinking like, I want to engage with this in my life? Or is that something that was kind of there, but you had other pursuits? Or was this like, I really want to find out what's going on?
Never as a youngster did I want to figure out the big questions. It was just always, oh, this is cool. What? There was a ghost there. There was this sighting. There was that. And there were just enough weird things that would happen throughout my life. I mean, I was driving with my friend Rick one day, and we were both maybe 17, 18 years old. It's a beautiful blue sky day, and we're driving past this old church near Roselle, Illinois. And as we're just talking, a lightning bolt hits the cross on the top of the church. Clear blue skies. And it hit, and we were mid-talk, and we're like, yeah, but no. And we just kept driving. He goes, did you just see that? And I go, the lightning bolt hit the church? He goes, yeah, yeah. It's blue skies. There's not a cloud above. And we just both watched this bolt of lightning strike the church. I have no understanding that, but it's always been just enough things to keep me interested in realizing there's something much bigger going on than just the life that everybody gets up, puts on their pants, brushes their teeth, eats their breakfast, goes to work, wash, rinse, repeat. So I've been fascinated in keeping my eyes open, my ears peeled, and just trying to live in these little magic moments in between life.
I'm curious, it was like you mentioned that your aunt was always had like an American aunt. That your aunt was also had an encounter with your dead grandmother. Are there more sort of incidents of with her and your grandmother, or other sort of paranormal incidents of other family members?
Aside from, you know, a couple of dream visitations to my aunt, nothing else besides that phone call. My aunt had another very interesting element, and I talk about this in my book too, not this specific story, but the concept of time slip phenomena. And my aunt was living at my grandfather's home after my grandmother passed away. And my grandfather was a construction worker in Chicago, and he would come home usually, maybe eat real quick, and then head up to the Shamrose tavern at the corner to have a couple of libations. And then he would come home, and she'd hear him pull into the driveway and the keys hit the counter, and he'd grab himself some water and then go to bed. And she heard all this the one night, and heard the bed creak in his room, and then the phone rang. And she reached over and picked up the phone, and it was my grandfather. And he said, hey, I don't want you to be worried. I'm going to stay at the Shamrose a little later tonight. And she's like, very funny, Dad. And he's like, what do you mean? And she said, I just heard you come in and go to your room. And he goes, I'm not joking, Judy. I'm still at the Shamrose. And he held the phone up so people, hey, you know. And my aunt's blood just ran cold. My grandfather hurried home quickly, thinking there might be an intruder, and there was no one there. But to me, that was this time slip phenomena, these things, what we would call a residual haunting if my grandfather were dead, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's just something that's matter of fact, nothing major about it. But I think that we're haunting ourselves in many instances. Those footsteps you hear going up the stairs at night, or the voices that call out your name, that, you know, was that my kid calling my name? And then you go upstairs and your kid's not there. I think we're in a place where, you know, where we're all sitting right now has always existed in time and space. It's been many different things, but it's always existed. And on each day is another page of that book And sometimes we just see through those pages and we have those experiences and we witness something that is not entirely ghostly, but it is definitely something out of time. And I think we're short-sighted if we think all hauntings are taking place from the past. Those bangings on the wall you may hear at night may not be from the past. It may be the family that's moved in 30 years from now that are remodeling the house at that time.
That's cool. Is that the overall theme of Theater of the Mind, or what is this book? What is its kind of purpose? Is it a compilation of best stories, or you tell us what's?
Well, in Theater of the Mind, I've got a great little combination of stories that I've collected over the years from listeners and followers. Many of them have sent in their stories and they're like, I just want somebody to hear my story, share it. Don't tell my name. You know, I'm an attorney or I'm a president. Somebody else. And they're just very cautious with what they allow out and what is to be shared. So some of the stories I've just changed their names with their permission, but their stories are their stories. And I thought it was a nice way to take a wide swath, everything from the very first story about JFK being a time slip story to a haunted hospital that I was involved in, a ghost haunting a doll that was one of my personal stories. But then there's a story of a changeling in Ireland. There's a story of a doppelganger. There is a story of aliens, another story of UFOs. So there's a really good mixture of different style stories. And I didn't want it to just be a ghost story book or aliens or Bigfoot. I think it's interesting to see the book individually for each story. And then as you step away, you can kind of see how there's so many different commonalities and threads that run through these type of experiences that I think we may limit ourselves by trying to compartmentalize the experience itself, that ghosts fit here, Bigfoot fits there, UFOs fit here. I think there's a lot more to what's going on around us that ties it all together.
No, I agree. I think that's something that when we had George Knapp on a while back, he talked
about. Name dropper.
Yeah. Well, here's another one. He was saying that James Lakatsky, who ran OSAP, who came to the conclusion after studying, setting up to study UAP. But by the end of their research, he came back with that you can't study UAP or UFOs without also studying the paranormal, because in his view, after years of looking at all the data, it's all the same thing. It's all overlapped and it's all intertangled. Is that sort of how you're feeling about it all now? That it's that what we're basically looking at, a weave of reality that is one that maybe isn't as simple as we think it is.
Right. And here's the brilliance and beauty of it all. Do you remember in, I think it was like the late 90s, all the rage were these goofy pictures you'd see at malls that were just wavy lines and weird patterns. And if you'd stand there long enough and kind of let your eyes gently cross, all of a sudden there's the kids in the hall popping out of this picture, or the Statue of Liberty or something. Right.
And you'd be like, I gave myself migraines doing those back in those days. Right. Yes.
But it's there, and it shows you just how vulnerable our perception of reality is that by looking at this picture on the whole, it's nothing but squiggly lines. By allowing yourself to kind of become part of it, into the tapestry itself, a story unfolds. And that sounds all woo-woo and tree-huggery, I know, but it's true. Look, I mean, that was a perfect example of how we can perceive different things and why some people do not have paranormal experiences and others may. Because how many times did you stand there next to your friend who's like, yep, Statue of Liberty. Oh, that's the lion from the Wizard of Oz. And you're crossing your eyes and getting closer and backing away and you can't see what they're seeing. Doesn't mean that it's not real. It just means that you perceive things in a different way, in a different light, in a different texture than other people do.
And some people may have more facility for adjusting their point of view, I guess.
Exactly.
I forgot the question I was going to ask. Somebody else talk.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we had started this whole idea of like, because Dave had, been kind of looking into the UAP issue and making, you know, friends and contacts with people who were, you know, in government or in the military, you know, and it was, we were like going to talk about this, yeah. you know, that was what mm-hmm. we were going to figure out. And then slowly, and but surely more of
the parent. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go on. You were,
yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, it's just, it just, you start to, you know, drift this way and that with the, just vexing weirdness of it all. And I, you know, I was open, like you, had early childhood kind of ghost experiences, yes. lived yeah. in a house that seemed, I'll lay it down, that house was haunted.
Tom's haunting is pretty extreme.
Yeah, I'm open into, and I have found, you mentioned immersing or getting, you know, kind of, if you sort of dive into this subject and the picture becomes clearer, mm-hmm. I'm wondering how literal that is, because I feel an uptick in weirdness since having, you know, now 50 conversations about this in an organized fashion, as opposed to before. I have really had moments where I went, the fuck is going on? Like, this is getting a little like intense, you know? And I'm curious if you've had that happen to you. I mean, you've been out there. I want to talk to you about investigating haunted houses and all. That's like my
sure.
that's like my dream job. But tell me what I mean. Do you feel that? Do you feel like, oh, I'm exposing myself to this phenomenon? And
yeah, I think the more you open yourself up to it, the more it becomes prevalent. It's like, all right, I always use this excuse, but it seems to be something universal. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. So I went out to buy myself a PT Cruiser one day because I love that old 1930s aesthetic, looking like an old gangster car. And I get there and they're out of black and they're out of silver and they've got purple left. And I'm like, well, I'm a Vikings fan. That's pretty cool. Nobody else has got a purple PT Cruiser. Everybody's got black, white, and silver. So I buy a purple PT Cruiser, and the way home, I see 20 purple PT Cruisers. It's because now my awareness, right, and my mnemonic mm-hmm. trigger has been right. ignited, and I see and I'm more aware of these things.
Yes. I think they call that attention bias.
Right. Yes. So you start to become more aware of the things that you're watching, right? What's the old saying, that if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at begin to change? And I firmly believe that. And I love the hippie-ness of this concept, that all of these little things happen in those spaces in between life. In those moments when you least expect, we have these really resounding, amazing experiences. And we're relaxed, or we're in a different heightened state, and something allows itself to be witnessed. And I think that's really a compelling aspect of all of what's going on. So when I'm investigating or opening myself up to this, I realize that, okay, going in, Dave Schrader, I'm not a medium. I can go to a very haunted location, like I did in, the Ghosts of Devil's Perch TV show. We stayed in Butte, Montana for almost 4 months solid, and we were steeped in that environment. So if you take a paperclip, it itself is not magnetized. But if you take it to a giant magnet and rub it against that magnet for a minute or two, you can now take that paperclip over to other paperclips, and they'll daisy chain two or three or four of them, right? Mm-hmm. And it's temporary, and it'll eventually, the magnetism will fade. Well, a lot of what we believe is going on is electromagnetic fields, both in UFO technology, in alien visitations, ghost visitations. So if I'm in a location long enough, I might start to resonate at that same kind of magnetism. And then when I go somewhere else, I'm more prone to having those experiences because I've kind of become one with that force, if you will. And I think that that's what lends so many people that are into this on a regular basis better access to that kind of communication. And when I had my UFO experience in 2006, at the end of it, James Gilliland looked at me and he said, now that they know you're watching, they'll be watching you.
Yeah. But tell us about your experience.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject. Yeah. Tell us about what happened.
I was driving home one night and it was late at night. I just started my podcast, my original paranormal podcast, and I'm listening to Coast to Coast AM. And George Norrie is talking to this guy called James Gilliland, and he owns this property in Trout Lake, Washington, known as the Assetti Ranch. And he's talking about the UFO activity and the volcano that opens up and UFO craft fly into it. It's so absurd and insane. Every story he tells is more bizarre than the one before it. But the clincher for me at the end was, and if you come here on a clear night and everyone's invited, you have a 90 to 95% chance of seeing activity over my property. Within 30 days, I'm on his front door. Mm-hmm. And I just went, and I didn't go into, I didn't want him knowing I'm coming. I didn't want anything set up. And there were other people there as well. And I got there and James greeted me very kindly. And he looks like, Grizzly Adams, for those of you that have any memory of the 70s TV, a big strapping fella, long hair, and he's just telling me what's going on. And of course, the first night I'm there, it's overcast, so the skies are not giving anything. And as we're talking, and he's pointing to this Mount Adams, I believe it is, the dormant volcano, there's lights pulsating inside the cloud. And I'm thinking, all right, science tells me there's going to be atmospheric change and pressure, and we're probably seeing some kind of weather anomaly. He's telling me, no, that's the UFOs. That's what they're doing. You're able to see this stuff. And I'm still like, or it's a weather anomaly and, you know, natural gas is going up and striking the clouds that are mm-hmm. dense with moisture, right. Being all Mr. Science, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the second night I go out there and we have this beautiful clear night. And I start watching these grains of sand move across the sky and then bank at strange angles and take off and stop and then go again. And he had those laser pointers, those green army military grade laser pointers. And this was after 9/11. And if you remember, there were people that were getting in a lot of trouble for aiming those little laser pointers red and green at airplanes. And he was not far from a military base. So he's painting the sky with these lasers, pointing things out, and he'd hit one and it would stop moving. And then all of a sudden it would start pulsing at him and then poof, it would take off. And skeptic or not, you got to be thinking, well, this is the worst spy vehicle on planet Earth. If this is Russia, they're like, oh, hello, comrade. Good to see you too, right?
Let's pulse at him. See if it helps.
It's insane. So I'm watching this, just trying to wrap my head around this. And the third night I go back out there, we'd spent the first night watching Mount Adams region in the sky. And that sky is gorgeous. It's like the screen behind me. Just, I've never seen a sky so vibrant and beautiful. And you could actually see the ribbon of the Milky Way. And I just watched the sky in complete and utter amazement. And what's also very startling is how through all these billions of stars, you begin to detect movement. And you can see these little grains of sand shooting around. And I'm still questioning what I'm experiencing. But at one point, I walk out into the field and I turn around and I face James and his house and all that property. And I'm looking, thinking, what am I missing this way? We've all been focused over here. Maybe the real light shows back here. I sit out there for about an hour and he had these tall groves of pine trees. And this thing comes flying out from behind the trees. And it looks like a stingray, not a plane, but the water creature, and it's fluttering across the sky and it's glowing blue. It was so absurd looking that it was like a 1980s music video effect, like very what early 80s.
Distance are you from this object in your
mind? I'm maybe 100 yards away from this thing, and it's about the size of my hand at that size, watching it flutter out from behind the trees and take off. So I do the one thing I never saw coming. I start running towards it. And as I'm running towards it, I'm keeping my eyes open. Now, mind you, I have a phone with a camera, although 2006, it's a flip phone with a 2-megapixel picture. So it would have been nothing that would have been seen. But I wanted to keep my eyes on this thing. And it was fast. I mean, it moved through. But I'm grabbing rocks up off the ground and I'm chucking them between the trees, waiting to hear as it hits a screen that he has up there, right? Figuring this guy's screwing with us, and there's nothing. And I walk between those trees and I'm lobbing rocks and pine cones and there's nothing. And I go walking back and James is just standing there all chill and it's very dark out and, you know, just beautiful. And he goes, what'd you see? And I explained to him what I saw. And without missing a beat, he goes, yes, those are half biological, half mechanical craft. The skins on them allow them to get in between dimensions. Now, mind you, I just saw this. I have no better explanation. And I looked at him like, what drugs are you on?
Yeah.
But I had no other way to ascertain what it was I saw, make any sense of it. And the real twist for me was this part. I at the end of the night, I drive down the hill. I go to bed in the little Trout Lake Motel, just beautiful little cabin-y hotel. And I go to bed, and I'm on the road all the time, like Dave, and I'm locking my door, and I latch it, and I chain it, and I bolt it, and I go to bed, and I wake up in the middle of the night to the sound of thumping, like somebody running in my room, and I hear my door slam, and I get up, I'm like, what the hell? And I get up and look, and sure enough, the chain is swinging back and forth on the door, goodness. And my door is unlocked and opened. So I'm looking, oh, did somebody break in? And then I'm like, well, how'd they get past the chain and the little bolt? I can't fathom what's just happened. In talking to James a day later, he goes, well, you spent 3 days watching them. I think maybe they just came to watch you, which was real unsettling. It sounds all beautiful.
Fair,
and,
but only oh, fair.
Right. Yeah.
It's weird. The thing you saw sounds alarmingly like the creature in Nope.
Did you? You know, to a degree, right? Yeah. And that's a great movie. If anybody has still not seen Nope, check it out.
But, I have not yet.
Wow.
I know.
Are you willing to kind of show your hosting here?
I'm trying. I'm
Why
working
don't you
on
just
it.
Take yourself off screen and
the I'm the novice
talk.
Here.
Watch
I'm,
the movie right now.
I'm yeah. Joe Q Public trying to get hip to what's happening in the world here.
Yeah.
That is, so what is the name of this ranch again? Where is it?
Yeah, because I think I want to visit. Are they still yes. getting this? Was it?
Yeah, sorry, you can on. Still get there. It's ECETI, and I don't remember what that stands for, but go to ECETI.org. That's his website, and he's always hosting some kind of an event there. So you can go, and you're welcome. And you make donations. You can stay there on the property.
Oh, you lost me.
you said is it Montana?
No, it's Trout Lake, Washington.
Trout Lake, Washington.
Yeah, so it's not far from Oregon. It's right over right over the border, basically. And you're right there. So it was really a remarkable experience.
Yeah, and so you also got a little bit of what the folks over at Skinwalker called the hitchhiker effect.
Yeah.
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 Which is which for people who don't know, that's the notion that when you view a UAP sighting, when you're exposed to these things, that often you will be followed by other extraordinary events.
Yes.
That weird things will just start happening. You know, like people that have been to Skinwalker have, you know, weird cryptids, 7-foot-tall bipedal wolves showing up in their yards, or blue spheres showing up in their children's bedroom. So weird things like that.
Yeah. And it's an astounding place. If you get a chance, and I've recommended it to so many people, only one TV show that I'm aware of took me up on it. And it was Paranormal State, the kids from Paranormal State back in the mm-hmm. day, Ryan Buell and the kids, they used to go out demon hunting every week on their TV show, facing off against some other creepy immortal creature. Right. And one day Ryan and the kids call me and they're like, Uncle Dave, so this UFO ranch you keep talking about, how serious are you about your experiences? I'm like, dude, I'm dead serious. And we just came back again. I went there with two of my other friends because I wanted to show them. And we had a crazy experience there. And as we're chatting about it, Ryan goes, well, we'd like to go there and do a Paranormal State field trip episode. And would you like to join us? I'm like, yes, I would. Let's do this. So I'm on, I think it's season 2. It's an episode called First Contact. And you can watch mm-hmm. it on the Max streaming service and Discovery Plus, I believe. But it's called Paranormal State. And we had a great time and we caught some amazing things on film that were really kind of astounding just to be there. But if I could tell real quickly, one of my favorite stories, when I got to the SETI Ranch the next time, it was like over the 4th of July weekend, and it was this huge hippie festival he had going on. And I went there with two of my friends. And when we first rolled up, there's beautiful clouds sprinkled in the sky, and there's this one cloud, and I've got to dig up the picture. I'll send it to you guys. And it's so funny because, you know, they tell you, oh, the UFOs hide in those lenticular clouds. And sometimes I'm like, this is a bit of a stretch that they're hiding in clouds, but there is a perfectly formed 1950s saucer type UFO cloud just hovering in the sky. And it's got the dome and everything. It mm-hmm. looks like a 1950s UFO, but it's a cloud. Clouds above it are moving. Clouds below it are moving. It's sitting there. And I'm just staring at this thing, talking with my friend. And I go, that is the craziest. If those are aliens trying to hide, they are the dumbest aliens. And as I say that, this black ball starts undulating at the bottom of the cloud. Something's moving within the cloud. And I turn and I look at her and I go, did you just see that? And she goes, yeah, there was like humps or like a black ball dropped out of that cloud. And I'm like, yeah. And we just stood there completely blown away. We're in a field of hundreds of hippies. Nobody's paying attention to this cloud. And we saw this thing take place. So as the day progresses, clouds are filling the sky. And I go to James Gilliland. I go, dude, I think we're in for a disappointment tonight. You got a whole field of hippies and there's no sky to watch. And he goes, no, I talked to my friends. It'll be clear over our property.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be clear over our property. Okay, James. And hand to God, the clouds filled the entire sky. And there was this giant football stadium size hole in the clouds above us.
And who are these friends he talked to?
The aliens.
Okay.
So that was my question.
Communication.
He had mentioned there was the skin and the half biological, half drone or whatever. I mean, did he specify how he was communicating with?
They made themselves known to him all the time. They just were there, and he communes with them and talks to them, and they commune with. I have no other explanation. Like I said, as absurd as it sounds, I can't give you a better rationale for what he says is going on, because he says the sky is going to remain clear over my property. And there is a giant circular hole in the clouds above his property. And as we're watching it through the night and the hippies start going to sleep, the cloud coverage keeps getting smaller, but it's still a perfect circle in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we get to the point where there's about 12 of us and we're looking up and we're all suffering from Pez neck, as I call it at this point, because all mm-hmm. of our heads are flipped back for hours. And at one point I look down and I go, this is amazing how the more people have gone down for the night and the intention is gone from watching the skies, how this hole has just slowly closed. And with that, we all look up and there's no hole in the sky. It's completely blanketed in clouds. The minute mm-hmm. we stopped watching it, it filled in. I cannot explain it for the life of me. You know, maybe there's cloud coverage that does that. Maybe this is a normal effect. I've never seen it or witnessed it in my many years of life. Doesn't mean that it doesn't actually happen, but I love it. I think that was one of the coolest moments I've ever had. I saw something undulating in a UFO-shaped cloud, and I watched cloud coverage close itself in at night, mm-hmm. and then like a light switch just turned itself off when everybody stopped paying attention to it.
I want to go. Chrissy,
yeah, me too.
This is a field trip that we need to figure out because that sounds amazing. And I think some of these places do exist that are these.
Yes, Skinwalker Ranch is not alone. And
right, the membrane is thin, and some of these locations and people are for whatever reason it's spilling out. In these areas, and that is totally wild.
I will say this, though. Again, the skeptical side of me kicks in. It is relatively near to a military facility, I think less than 100 or 200 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's also photographs, or there used to be and you can go to YouTube as well. Type in ECETI Ranch or ECETI UFOs, and there used to be littered with videos of UFOs, and you'd see this thing go screeching across the sky and all these black helicopters going after it. Is it military? If it's military and we're painting the sky with 30 green military grade laser pointers and it stops, I'm sure without a doubt that if we were doing that to military personnel, there would have been a convoy coming to arrest a whole bunch of hippies.
Yeah. Jeeps would have shown up. Pretty quickly.
No doubt. And three times there, never once did anything show up that would say that military was behind it.
No, and the location of a military, I mean, it does seem like military bases seem to attract this kind of activity.
I was going to say,
A lot of the weirdest stuff the most documented stuff is coming from military bases and from military observers. So obviously there's something about those installations is attracting phenomena.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about it. And it is. It's amazing, but it makes you wonder, is it some kind of super technology we're working on? Is the reason that it's stopping and reacting to our laser pointers is because it's an unmanned drone of some sort, so we're not blinding the pilots? You know, there's a lot of different speculation that goes along with it. But yeah. Until I can get full answers, I can't just dismiss it. At one point, I'm watching this. It was maybe the size of like, I don't know, like a thumbtack size light moving through the sky. And James hands me these like third gen night vision goggles. And I flip them up to look at the sky and I go, holy shit. And he goes, what? And I said, that's not one light. And I hand it to him. And it was this massive triangle going over us. But you could see the stars.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just the tip had a light to it and it was moving across. And I'm like, huh? And I put the goggles back up and look. And when you're looking through the night vision goggles, you cannot see the stars. You just see this black craft moving silently across the sky.
Yeah, but to the naked eye, the stars.
Yeah, the stars and one light, shining light, and that was it.
Wow.
That is crazy. How do you find your stories? I mean, obviously some come to you now because you're known and you're an expert on this stuff, but what other methods do you use?
I don't want to brag, but I am a Golden Telly Award winning internet.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
National TV sensation of paranormal programs, but
there you go.
Beside the point.
Sure you didn't want to brag?
No. Hey, look,
I'm having a t-shirt made up with that. I just think it's
that's a
it's
lot
not
of words.
So much bragging as it is just making sure you understand.
Yeah,
who know. I am, so that you don't think I'm nuts.
That's why you're here.
That would be weird if I was making those claims without it being on my t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it was like that night, coast to coast. I just happened to listen. The guy throws out, you're welcome here. Anybody's welcome. Clear night, 90 to 95% chance. Honestly, if I told you guys there's a 90, 95% chance that on this specific night, if we go to the Ford Theater, we're going to see Abraham Lincoln's ghost, you would go, even if you thought Dave's nuts. Yeah. But you would go if I said, I'm telling you guys, it's a 90 to 95. That's such a huge portion to offer. So I just went and I've always thought I didn't want to just be the guy behind the mic talking about these things. I'd lived through so many weird experiences. I want to go. And if you tell me this is taking place, I'll go put myself into that position and see if I can prove it to myself. Is it really happening? And there have been very few places that have let me down in the, you know, categories of high strangeness, but for the most part, I've had some really, really cool moments.
And I want to say, and you're also like you were joking about like Dave's crazy. What I think, first of all, your interviews are great. Your show is great. It's just such a great energy. And but you also, I mean, I respect you challenge some guests that if you kind of smell bullshit, you kind of call bullshit. It's an interesting thing because I mean we don't do that so much on this show because it's sort of, but it's tricky. Sometimes you're like, you know, you're listening. You're like, okay, how do you gauge that? How do you gauge sincerity in terms of who's on your show?
It's a lot easier now that I do video programs like this because I can watch And as I see Dave describing this experience of Bigfoot stealing his basket when he was, you know, at a picnic, I can gauge, is he doing it tongue in cheek or is there a sincerity? It was a lot harder when I just used to do the show over the radio and talking on Coast. I was a fill-in host for 5 years on Coast to Coast AM. And sometimes you can't read the audience. But the one main thing that I took away from it was I never judge the story. I allow it to just breathe, because some of the most ridiculous sounding stories to me, I would, you know, Dave Foley calls in from Canada to tell me this story, and it's ridiculous. It's about these giant frog-like creatures that are known to do this, that, and the other. And, you know, my producer and I are rolling our eyes at each other. Okay, Dave, thanks a lot. 2 days later, I get an email going, I want you to know, Dave, I have been on the cusp of suicide 2 or 3 times in my life because I've seen those same creatures, and I thought I was nuts. I thought I was completely insane. And now that I know somebody else has had this experience, so I've stopped judging so much just because it doesn't fit my lexicon or understanding of the world. And I've allowed that to be. But I also find that if you're talking to a guest who has good, fun energy and they're playing with you, Dave could tell me that story and I'll go, and just out of curiosity, were there edibles involved, Dave? No. I wish there were, but, and then you can just it's my way of politely saying, this sounds like bullshit, and giving him an out, and then letting the audience know, I'm with you. I know how nuts this sounds. And, but sometimes those are the most fun and engaging moments I've had. I had this woman, I get this press release, and this woman had come into contact with the devil incarnate in human form. And she had had this weird kind of relationship with the devil for years. And this PR person should have been given some kind of an award because it was so beautifully written. So I invite this woman on the show, and she is such a sweetheart. And we laughed together throughout the entire show because she understood how insanely absurd everything she said was. She got it. But she stuck to her story, which made me love her and believe her even more, because she met the devil through an ad in the Penny Saver because she was looking for a dance partner to go to clubs and she didn't want to go alone. And I said, well, it's good to know that the economy is so rough that even the devil has to put an ad in the Penny Saver. And we laughed about that. When I knew I had her then, I knew we could play this little cat and mouse game. And throughout the entire story, as more absurdities would unfold, and the fact that he lived in a double wide trailer in Arkansas, of course he did, and he had his concubines stayed in their little trailers on his property, it was more and more bizarre. But she put him in his place. I'm not going to sleep with you, and we're not, I just like to dance with you, so this is what we're going to do. So the devil would just dance with her and go have sex with the other concubines. But it was such a charming story, and for 100% of me believes she believes every word she just told me.
It is a good Stephen King short story. I mean, I'm liking that. I love the like, you know, I'll just dance with you. I'll just dance with you, devil. Right. It is. And you know what? But there's that weirdness that almost protects the phenomenon from exposure, where it's like someone's story, just it's there is no logic. There's so odd. We're left to kind of just accept. I mean, it seems like everyone, what's becoming clear to me is that everyone has some firsthand or secondhand contact with the weird, the mysterious, the unknown that is, that makes it far more ubiquitous than I ever realized. You know, it feels like something, that was, you know, private to me, you know, it's just very, but the moment you push a little, someone's got a story. I was curious.
And the more you do this, the more you'll hear people go, Tom, Dave, I love your show. I listen all the time. It is the funniest show. I can't believe you guys believe all these morons you have on your show. They're so ridiculous. But when I was a kid, and then they launched into their own story, it's so dismissive of everybody and everything. But let me tell you about my one experience. So I find that people, it's a protection that they throw up, that they're trying to shield themselves from your scorn. I'm much too intelligent to fall for everything else.
Yeah. I'm not crazy.
My experience, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely, I know, it's like as soon as I started talking about these sort of things publicly, like I was startled by the number of people who would reach out to me some people I'd known for years who had weird experiences. And, you know, at the time I had not had any experiences. Like, you know, I mean, I did eventually attract a UFO into my life by talking too much. But yeah, there was just so many people who have these experiences and for so long don't want to talk about it. Or, you know, like there's that notion, you know, there's that misconception that people, the people who want to talk about UFOs, it's because, oh, they just really want to believe and they want to have seen a UFO and it's there, you know, and so, they, you know, it's a fantasy because it's something they really want to be true. And almost everyone I've ever met fights like a dog against it, you know,
right?
Do everything in their power to think of some other explanation for what they saw. And then they keep it a secret for as long as they can and only tell a handful of people because they don't want to be mocked. They don't want to be dismissed.
And that's a lot of the sincerity I see in people that tell me their stories and they relate these tales to me. And I can see in their eyes that this is just as real as that favorite Christmas morning for you, that memory. And I'm always really kind of touched by when people decide to open up to me and share these experiences and stories, because, you know, sometimes that is their deep, dark secret. That is their, I just want you to tell me if I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people, you can
people
say
with shame from.
Right.
From
exactly. Yeah. And it's so cool. But I do want to thank you, Dave Foley, because one of my favorite surreal moments in my life ever was being at one of the conferences with you, and you invited me over. We met down at the bar and you said, "Hey, I've got some friends joining me. Would you like to come have a drink?" And sure. So I get to sit down and there's Todd Stashwick from 12 Monkeys and Star Trek Picard, and Harry fucking Hamlin walks over and we're talking ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot. And it was just like this surreal moment of, holy, it's,
yeah,
everybody, this has touched everybody's life. It was so cool. And I love that Harry Hamlin drops this like 20-minute ghost story on us. And then, as we're talking about Bigfoot, he's like, "I'm up in the High Sierras by myself all the time. Why doesn't Bigfoot attack me? And why are," like, he was almost pissed that Bigfoot wouldn't acknowledge him.
And then Harry Hamlin.
Like, yeah. And then he's like, "Well, I'm going to bed." And he just walks away. It was just like this great moment of surreal nature. So I do have to thank you. That was truly one of my favorite memories.
That was a fun night. I really liked that night too. It was a great conversation.
Are there any topics you won't touch, Dave?
I am not a big fan of most conspiracy theories. And you think that's kind of strange in this element, but you know, I think part of it is just for my own sanity.
Right.
I understand that our government does horrible things. And sometimes in the name of what they believe to be the greater good, I don't want to know just how dark and deep that well is. So it's my own way of just trying to keep, I'm prone to depression and anxiety in my life already. And I have 11 children and 8 grandchildren. The last thing in the world I want to do is sweat more.
11 children?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm aware how that happens. Yeah.
That's why you're on the road so much.
All the time.
That explains it.
Honey, I'm pregnant. I got to go.
Yeah. Look at the time. So conspiracies weird me out. But I'm, you know, some I'm fascinated by. I actually, through the good graces, I got a call one day when I was hosting my old radio show. And this publicist goes, "Hey, Judith Vary Baker is in the Twin Cities and she knows your show and she would like to come in and sit with you and talk to you about the JFK assassination." And I'm another story about the JFK assassination. She goes, "Well, Judith Vary Baker was the lover of Lee Harvey Oswald." Wow. Now I'm a little bit more piqued because this is a firsthand acknowledgement. And I want to know how, and it's not over the phone. She wants to come into your studio and she wants to meet with you. And I'm like, okay. And I had her come into the studio and she sat down with this huge tome of scrapbook she had collected, photographs of her and Lee, time cards from the organization they worked with. And if you're familiar with Dr. Mary's Monkey and that story, Lee Harvey Oswald worked at that lab. So did Judith Vary Baker. And she tells this story. And at the end of the story, I firmly believe Lee Harvey Oswald did not pull the trigger in the JFK assassination. I believe that he got wind of it. And as a good patriot, tried to tell the president what was happening, went to his superiors. And he came back to Judith Vary Baker and said, "I just signed my death warrant. They're going to kill the president. And I'm going to take the hit for this." And she knew days in advance. Now, it's always easy to tell a story after the fact, but there are some other compelling things for a guy who hated America. When they arrested him, he was wearing his Marine ring, his Marine's ring. He was still involved in a lot of these things. So it's really, that was a fascinating look into the story I hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. I've done episodes on did Paul McCartney die in the 60s and get replaced by a doppelganger? Because as a kid, who didn't go through that rabbit hole, right? Mm-hmm. And did Elvis fake his own death? And I love that story and had a great time. And one of my all-time favorite interviews was I talked to this woman who believes Michael Jackson faked his death. And if anybody in the world had the money and the wherewithal and the weirdness to fake his own death, it was going to be Michael Jackson. So I looked over her website. I agreed to have her on. She claims to be in touch with Michael. Mm-hmm. So as we're doing the show over the phone, she texts me and says, Michael would like to call in. And I'm like, okay. And I shoot over the number. And all of a sudden I see my producer pick up the phone. And he's talking. He hangs up and I go, who was that? He goes, I don't know. He kept calling himself Peter Pan. I go, put him through. And I text her and I said, sorry, my producer hung up, put him through. So all of a sudden I go, we have a phone call. And yeah, hello, Dave. But this person is spot on Michael Jackson, like unbelievable, every nuance, every intonation. And we have this talk and I'm watching at the time we had this live chat room and I'm watching it explode. Half the group like, holy shit, he's talking to Michael Jackson. The other half's like, this is insane. Why would you give this moron any time? So we're sharing these stories and there are a lot of weird things associated with, did he really die? Everything up to the fact that like when his daughter attempted suicide, which had been like 2 days before this interview. And I pushed that button and I said, Michael, and I'm going to call you Michael. I know you want me to call you Peter, but we know why you called in. If you are who you say you are, why are you calling into my little paranormal show 2 nights after your daughter attempted suicide? And he goes, you can't always believe the media. It was not exactly as they're portraying it. I'm very aware of what's going on with Paris and everything is under control. And then my co-host plays this audible and it was an actual voicemail. Dr. Conrad Murray had left for Paris. So here's the man that murdered your father. And he's still in touch with her. And the message is like, Paris, I'm sorry you're going through this. You know, your father's very proud of you. And if there's anything I can do, just let me know. That's not the phone call of a man who gave a shot to somebody's father and killed them. So there are so many strange hills. And then his posthumous album come out called Escape. And it looks like he's in a body bag, right? There's this weird thing in space. All of it was a great theater of the mind. And so is this guy talking. And we share this moment. And I said, listen, let's put aside all the allegations because nothing has been proven. For what it's worth, thank you for the music and the entertainment. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the gift of entertainment that you gave to the planet. And I just want you to know, I appreciate you calling in. And for all of you listening tonight that are exploding about how dare I, and your numbers are growing, I'm watching it live. I want you to remember that on other nights, we talk about fairies and Bigfoot and ghosts and demons and UFOs and anal probes. And that you can buy into. But the fact that one of the richest, wealthiest, most powerful men on the planet might have needed a mental break and stepped away from life and reality. Let's just think of this one moment that maybe 20 years from now, it's revealed Michael Jackson really is alive. And there was that one night in 2008 that he called into a little radio station in Minnesota and shared his story. Have a good night, everybody, and I hope you enjoy the ride. And I let it go, and it was just this great little way to go out because, again, there was no doubt this guy was not Michael, but he was so good. Mm-hmm. So, and I tried yeah. doing that again you, on you another did that interview. So well,
I really felt like we should sign off.
I'm sorry. No, for Tom and Dave, I'm Dave.
Beautifully done.
Yeah, beautifully thank you.
Done. No, well, I think that I was thinking recently about the notion of. Or the public conception of conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. And thinking that's an invented term.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure it was probably invented by maybe the intelligence community.
Oh, you think so? Disinformation,
and,
Dave?
Yeah. And that that it's
he's on to us, guys. He's on to us. Red Coat 3, get Foley out of the picture.
Yeah, because I mean, I do believe most conspiracy theories are madness and insane. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's been an effort made to discredit all conspiracy theories when we know for a fact that conspiracies happen all the time, that our government has been caught doing terrible things. That they, you know, that they have tried to pass off as conspiracy theories. And in fact, the more they get caught, the more we started hearing how ridiculous conspiracy theorists are and how we should all just laugh at anyone who has a conspiracy theory, you know, including the JFK assassination. And now it's, you know, and I've fallen prey to it. I know that I have been somebody who throughout most of my life has not been willing to listen to anything about the JFK assassination. And now I'm going, now that people force me to listen to stuff, I go, oh yeah, it does sound kind of weird. And that doesn't work.
And isn't it weird that some of these, like there was a recent documentary that just came out where they talked to the emergency room doctor that worked on Kennedy. And he said, and his quote was that the Secret Service told him to say the bullet entered from the rear and then exited from the front. When in fact that is not what they found, and the doctor came out and admitted that.
Yeah, yeah. There's an awful lot that that doesn't make sense and should be looked at and should be looked at seriously, but we don't because again, much like the UFO phenomena, we just the mainstream media just goes UFOs, oh nonsense, and JFK conspiracies, nonsense. We know for a fact that it was a single gunman, and we know the guy, we got him, and sadly, we weren't able to avoid him being murdered,
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah, very strange. And you look at all these different elements of these stories and how they play into it, but then I'll be an apologist, which I almost feel dirty saying, but for some of these things, like the assassination of Kennedy, I had to understand why our government needs to hide that. Because who could live in a world where you fully accept, oh, my government killed my president, or the fact that the, with UFOs, we've seen the way people react to certain things. And if you suddenly feel like mommy and daddy can't protect you anymore, the world becomes a henny penny and you worry about everything happening and collapsing. And what can we trust? The government's painted themselves into a weird corner where they're like, I think they're trying to find a way to admit it, but they have to be like, but we can't go back to 47. We kind of got to start in 2023
or
2020 when the footage starts leaking. We can start to admit to that now, because if we admit to what we've said in the past, that means we admit to lying all along. But what we can do is find a way to share the narrative like, hey, we're just as surprised as you. We thought these things were crazy. We didn't even know those elements of the government. And all those people are dead now. We're just uncovering this ourselves. So there's these plausible deniability claims that they're able to insert. So I see parts of it, and I see because people react very poorly to things they don't understand. And it can be frightening when the world reacts and when that global consciousness reaches a fervor, how people can respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very sensible and logical way to look at the government's response, because it does feel like this uncertain step forward, step back, this part's resisting, this part's pushing forward. It's clearly a time of kind of confusion and if you're trying to follow this and you're trying to follow the day to day, it's dizzying and bewildering, because this part of the government seems to want the truth out. This part of the government doesn't want the truth out. As it relates to the Kennedy thing, I was just recalling RFK Jr., regardless of whatever you think of his politics, and he's definitely has some theories, but he was talking about his dad, and calling the CIA right after the, calling, I think, Alan Dulles, saying, did you do this? Did you do this? That was his first, that was his first thought. And you can only imagine, right? These are just people just dealing with these institutions and some very, a lot of stakes, a lot of it is fascinating. I personally, probably just out of sort of cowardice, you know, and a desire to just stop it somewhere, particularly with the UAP stuff, because it does tend to just sort of pull you down into weirder and deeper and darker territory. And at some point, I just decide, like, okay, I'm gonna stop here. I will, accept there are some discs maybe in some garages someplace, mm-hmm. and we'll find out what they are, and I won't explore too deeply what our association with them is. Or I think I'm about willing to go there. I wanted to ask you, though, sort of as a pivot, because I am curious, because okay. I was serious about this being my dream job. It's like, I want to be an in-the-field ghost, you know, that seems to me...
Yeah.
An in-the-field ghost investigator. I've watched more hours of people bumping around in the dark, looking for ghosts than I care to admit to, but we're in the thousands of hours now at this point. So as someone who has done this, give us a behind-the-scenes look. When you're looking around with cameras following you, how do you actually ascertain actual phenomenon? Are you what is the mindset? Are you actually waiting for things to happen? Do you feel a pressure to create? I mean, just tell me what that's like.
All solid questions. And I can tell you that the programs I've been a part of, I've never felt that there was any fakery going on with. And if it was stuff that I was unaware of. When we did the Holzer Files and Ghost of Devil's Perch, our request was we get to take the chips home, not production, who can take them and plug them into computers and use fun little things to make things appear. So they let us at the end of the investigation, we went around and we collected the memory cards, mm-hmm. and poor Shane literally sat in his room for the next 2 days reviewing footage. And when he came upon something that he wanted either me or the director to weigh in on, he would call one of us in and we'd look at a piece and say, yeah, that's something we want to show, or nah, that's garbage. So none of what I was a part of, I felt, was faked. I think, you know, there are dramatic moments that we might, you know, you hear something, boom, the car backfires outside and we all turn and that's a commercial break. There was no ghost, but it was, you know, I understand them needing an out as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we never made a claim that it was anything supernatural. So I just forgot that there were camera people there. I really just focused on what would I do if I was in here investigating? How would I try to connect with the spirits? And this is what I promise you, Tom. Dave, I've already told you this. When you're back out in California and I can arrange a time, let's get together and I'll come out there and you guys will go investigate someplace together. And I'll bring my recorder and we'll get real-time EVP if there's something there.
Chrissy, make a note. 109.35.
Yeah,
okay, we're going on a ghost hunt with Dave Schrader.
Because okay. when we were talking about starting this, we had originally sort of planned on it being much more than just UFOs. Like mm-hmm. we were talking because of Tom's experience, a haunting in his youth, you know, that we were, you know, and I had my own UFO experience, but we talked about it, and it's kind of just been over the last couple of years, the UFOs just won't stop. Like all of the information.
Well, the news is great. This is something hot button. Why wouldn't you want to keep your finger on that pulse right now?
Yeah,
I totally respect that. And I do want to tell you, I'm also a fan of your show because I love that you take it from this this kind of esoteric sense of nobody knows what's going on. And you make it very accessible for all viewers and listeners to be a part of this ride with you. And I appreciate that. And I know they do as well, because you're not talking down. You can do it and have some fun and be tongue in cheek, but then get very serious about what these elements really mean about the bigger picture. And that's important. So keep doing what you're doing, man. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
But I'll be happy to go Bigfooting with you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And go UFO hunting with you. And Stashwick said he'll come with us if we go out looking for UFOs.
Oh, great.
So
oh, good.
Hamlin's on his own, though. He likes to just be in the High Sierras by himself. So
yeah. Well, Stash is fun. He's a good guy to be in the woods with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We will figure that out because, I want to, well, tell me, give me a good, what's one of your freakiest in the field moments, or what has stuck with you? Or is there a particular, like, what the fuck was that? Or something that you don't wish to revisit? Yeah. Please revisit.
There's no place, nothing I've ever done that I wouldn't want to revisit, because I want to just keep pushing the envelope and trying to understand. I would say the very first episode I filmed of the Holzer Files,
And who was Hans Holzer? Just give a brief, like, because sure. he was a name I wasn't as familiar with.
And that's sadly why our show probably didn't go beyond two series. I wish they would have called the show Holzer's Ghost Files, because at least the word ghost in the title would have attracted. What is this? Dr. Hans Holzer was a preeminent paranormal investigator in the United States. He was originally from Austria. He lived here and worked as a journalist who then became involved in the paranormal field, tagging along on some investigations and found that he was adept at doing these things. And he wrote over, I think, 180 books on ghosts, UFOs, psychic phenomena, witches.
That's a lot of books. Holy
yeah,
shit.
He had written a bunch of things, and he had all these case files that he had investigated. And I was lucky enough on my show to be the last program he ever did an interview with. Oh, wow. So there was that connection. And I had become friends with his daughter, Alexandra. So when this opportunity to become the lead investigator opened, I jumped at it. It was an amazing opportunity to
go back.
It's
a cool concept, too. I love the case files. I love the fact that these were, like, you know, had been investigated. You're going to revisit. I think that's a very cool concept. So I just wanted to get, like, the background. Yeah. But you didn't want to interrupt. You were telling your revisit.
Yeah, so that was just going back in and getting those chances are really astounding. And the first case we're going to dive into is the Whaley House in San Diego. And I thought, oh God, really, the Whaley House? Isn't there a better story we can start with? But Hans Holzer put the Whaley House on the map. He's the first one to explode the story of the hauntings that took place there. So I understood why they wanted to start there. And I went in, and I've been friends with guys and gals on every paranormal TV show since, you know, Ghost Hunters launched in 2004, 2005. So I've known these people. I've worked with them. I love them. I respect them. I have been on like a dozen episodes of Ghost Adventures and Paranormal State and things. So I've been a part of the machine. And so we go to this place. And even though these are friends and people I like, when I see somebody get scratched or pushed or whatever, there's still that side of me that's like, come on, did that really happen? Did that really, really take place? So when we were in there and we were calling on this one spirit, Juan Verdugo, and Juan had been one of these, I'm trying to think of the proper terminology. He was a Mexican patriot, if you will, who just his men, they decided we're taking back this property you just took all of this land from us. And they were like the heroes of their story, right? They were the ones coming back to do this. And the townspeople gathered up these intruders and did horrible things, from hanging them to making, I think Juan Verdugo was one that had to dig his own grave.
Oh God!
And then they all shot him, including Mr. Whaley, and he fell into his grave and they buried him. And we believe that we had encountered this, and Violet Whaley had committed suicide, took her own life, sadly. And Mr. Whaley lifted her body, brought her into the house and watched her die, and then ran out to go try to find help. And by the time he came back, she had passed. And that's just tragic. And we were standing right near where Violet Whaley had passed. And we were standing in this archway, and that's where the original hangman's noose was. That's where they ended the life of some of these people. And we started engaging, and I said, Juan Verdugo, you were shot by Mr. Whaley. Were you responsible for pushing Violet Whaley to take her own life? And loud as thunder, a gunshot goes off in the house. And it freaked me and Shane and Cindy, the medium, out. We're all like, what the hell? And I'm like, did we get that on recording? So we played it back, and we played it back like three or four times. And the third time we played it, you watch the episode, I go slam into Shane, and then I fall forward and I hit the ground. So what I had thought is, you guys, when you're watching these paranormal TV shows and it's all night vision, you have this false sense of security because it's all lit up for you. We can't see what you're seeing because we're in pitch black. We can't see the night vision lights. And I thought what had happened was a cameraman had come around me to get a shot and probably tripped on the carpet. It was that heavy when it hit me, and it slammed me into Shane, and then I fell forward. And when I turn around, and there's nothing there, it just broke my brain. I could not process what just happened to me. And then I'm even questioning, did I just black out and think I fell? Shane jokes around saying, did that old man just have a heart attack? You know, and I go outside and I'm trying to collect myself. And they had some weird stuff happen. Like we had our executive producer from Travel Channel had come to watch this first episode get filmed. And she was standing outside at one point, and they were talking about the ghost, and one of the light bulbs above exploded. So she was already unnerved. And then she watched this 6'1" strapping buck of a man get knocked around like a rag doll. And they called me over and they're like, did you fake this? And I'm like, no, I don't know if I blacked out. I don't know what happened. And they're like, we've watched this footage. And they said, come over and look at this. We can't wrap our head around this. And I'm Dave, you've met me. I'm not a little guy and I'm certainly not fleet of foot. And they rewind it and show it. And it looks like a linebacker hit me from the side. My hip lifts, my knees bend and my ankles break. And I hit Shane. It's like somebody punched and lifted me. And I'm not a dancer. It's not like I just threw myself into this crazy pirouette and made it happen.
Yeah. You'd have to be a skillful mind.
Yeah. They just kept watching and they're like, we can't fathom what just happened to you here. We cannot fathom what just happened to you. And there were people, these guys had worked on other paranormal shows and that unnerved all of us. And Cindy and Shane stood up against the spirit. I did go back in by myself and kind of address the spirit and apologized for challenging Juan. And I'm like, I didn't mean it that way. I wanted to know, were you responsible for influencing her to do this as a form of revenge? It was not meant to be disrespectful. And I'm sorry you took it that way. We will be back. And I'm not going to run away. I want to tell your story and I want to get it right. And I think it was the empathy and love that we showed on the show to the spirit realm and our commitment to giving them a voice that made the show so special. And I'm really proud of the 23 episodes we did. And I feel it stands alone and it's not like any other paranormal show that was out in its time. And I'm really proud of those elements. Plus, we got a chance to play the actual audio, video, and photographs from the original investigations from Dr. Hans Holzer. So that was remarkable in itself.
Is there a way to, or is it, can we catch it someplace? Is there a way to?
Tubi, the free TV service has it there. You can check it out on Tubi with commercials. If you have Max, the streaming service, it is on Max.
Oh, so
you can find the Holzer Files. You can find my follow-up series. Cindy and I went from two seasons of The Holzer Files over to Ghosts of Devil's Perch, which was the fourth season of an ongoing series. The first two seasons were Ghosts of Shepherdstown with Nick Roth and Elizabeth Saint. Season three was The Ghost of Morgan City with Ben Hansen, the UFO enthusiast and hunter, and Sarah Lemos, Jeremy Leonard. And then season four was a new team. It was Cindy, Keza, the medium, myself, and Katie Stafford, the tech, and we stayed for almost 4 months in Butte, Montana, investigating the claims at the behest of the mayor and the police chief. So you can watch Ghost of Devil's Perch there. I did a documentary called The Curse of Lizzie Borden that's there. So all of those are out and available to see, and hopefully people will check them out and enjoy them for what they are, because we really wanted to get the history right and we tried to treat these stories with respect. But getting knocked on my ass was really a game changer for me, because I didn't believe that really happened, that something had that kind of force. I mean, look how long it took Patrick Swayze to learn to just knock a pop top off a garbage can.
Telling you, that is fucked up. That's cool, though. I mean, not cool to get knocked over. Cool to hear the story. Probably not as much fun to get knocked
on you.
No,
it is. I feel... You know, I got bit on the show. You can see the bite marks appear on my arm. I got knocked over a couple times. I split my back open going backwards into a bathroom, and I literally fell and hit the toilet paper roll. Not heroic in any way, but I split my back open. And people are like, don't you want to just get out of this? I'm like, no, I kind of look at it as a gift from the spirit realm. They apparently feel comfortable enough with me to engage me in a way that gets my attention. And then they see I'm not just going to run out and scream and not return. I go back in and I want to help. And I think that's why we got such good response from the spirit realm.
My strategy will be to send Dave Foley in first. He's my canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens to him.
I'm virtually canary sized.
Yeah. What we could do is just put a rope around your ankle, Dave. So when you get in deep enough, if something goes bad, Tom and I will just drag you back.
Carol Ann. We're going to send Dave in and then we'll, get him all slimed. Yeah. And no, that
this
sounds...
Canadian is clean.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. If I walk into room in between the two of you, they're going to go, okay, which one of you guys is the ventriloquist?
I'm ready. Dave, you're going. We're going to have, and Dave Schrader will bring us to some of the best haunted places just for, this is super fun, by the way. Reminder, Paranormal 60 is the podcast. Yes. The book you have out is Theater of the Mind? No.
Yeah. Theater of the Mind, Tales from the Darkness. And it's a good collection of about 15 different stories, everything from ghosts to UFOs to near-death experiences, monsters, myths, legends, the Bloody Bones Man, Black Eyed Kids. So we try to cover a wide swath of strangeness. And that's available on Amazon.com. It's the only place I'm selling it is Amazon. So wherever you are in the world, you can buy it on Amazon in either physical form or ebook. Or if you'd like a signed copy, you can go to paranormal60.com and scroll down the front page and you'll see the book there and you can order a signed copy. And I'm pretty quick at signing and sending them out right away. So that's there as well.
That's awesome. Fantastic. And
you know what I'd like to do? I'll tell you what, gentlemen, I would like to, for your Patreons, you can hold a little contest. And I will give you a free copy and you tell me who the winner is and I'll sign it and send it out to one of your patrons.
Let's go. Here we go. It's already turning around, this whole Patreon thing. That's awesome. Thank you for that. That's great, Dave.
My pleasure. Sure.
Please check out Paranormal 60. It's great interviews, great production. It's just really fun. And Dave has great experience and he's also a skeptic. So it's just really cool stories. Some chilling stories, but you will definitely enjoy. And we really enjoyed this conversation with you, sir.
I would like to extend the invitation to both of you. I've had Dave visit a few times, but I would love to have both of you on to kind of share your thoughts and ideas, especially since starting the show to this point. How radically have you changed in your perceptions of the strange and supernatural? So let's get the both of you on and
we'll visit the widening aperture of our credulity.
That's for sure. We'll do it. I'd love that. That would be great. We'll do it for sure. And again, thank you so much. This was super fun. My pleasure. We look forward to much more.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you.
Take care.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.